Welcome to a special bonus episode of the Voicemails for the Dead podcast. In our last episode, we got to hear from Lauren Carroll, who is one half of the Death Wives. This episode, Lauren and I get to dive deeper into the work the Death Wives do and discuss all things related to the end of life time period. Lauren, can you start by telling us a little bit about what you all do as the Death Wives?
The Death Wives officially started 4 years ago, but me and Aaron met about 9 years ago, and I was teaching workshops about home funerals. She came, we hit it off, and she was like, more people need to know about this. For like 5 years, me and her were single moms, working multiple jobs, meeting each other wherever we could to put together classes to educate people on end of life. And so our classes are really focused on death doulas and what a death doula is and how they can provide support at end of life, what the end of life looks like for people, how to plan a funeral, which funerals are really, really important, home funerals, of course, and then rituals and ceremonies around death and dying are really our main focuses. And a death doula, if you don't know, it's a non-medical role. We really say it's a human to human work. It teaches people how to accompany people while they're dying, whether that's early on in the diagnosis and talking about maybe fears that they have, things that they need to take care of, estates, you know, maybe emotional things that are holding them back. And then we move to the time of death or when they're actively dying and how to support a person during that time. And then after death, how to support the family, how to help arrange funerals, a lot of stuff that just people don't talk about, so they don't know what to do. And there's tons of people out there that want to help support people.
Do you want to take a second to just define what a home funeral is?
So I'll start off by saying that home funerals have been safe, legal, since all time. It's what your great-great-grandparents most likely did. A home funeral is nothing new. We're just reminding people that this has always been an option for them and then how to do it. So a home funeral literally means instead of having the body go to a funeral home, the family keeps their loved one at home. And instead of going through the process of embalming, we use ice to keep the body cool, which again is totally legal, totally safe, available in all 50 states. Most people just don't know it. And as a funeral director, that was one of the things that I saw over and over again was people didn't have enough time with their loved one. They'd come into the funeral home, spend 2 to 4 hours. They have to spend money for that time. Their person has to go through a process to be ready for the viewing. When at home, they're just at home and people can come and go as they please. I always like to tell a story about a family I worked with. The sons had a very rocky relationship with their dad. Hadn't talked to him in years, I think over 10 years, and he died. They didn't want to see him alive, but they came to the home after he had died. And the wife at 2 o'clock in the morning could hear them talking to their dad saying, "We forgive you for everything you did to us. We just want to tell you what our life is like. We love you." That is something you're not going to get at a conventional funeral home. I think that we do a huge disservice to grief in general, but really those first active hours, that first time after death, is so crucial to how we grieve. And we're so disconnected from death that we have this disconnect from grief. And so to me, home funerals were like the starting point. You are caring for your loved one just as they cared for you. And what a beautiful thank you and send off and time to spend with them after they've died.
I love the fact that it's also separate from any specific religious practice. It gives you different options when it comes to how you want to grieve. In this podcast, we're really trying to highlight stories of complex and disenfranchised grief. When people's grief doesn't feel super simple, and I wouldn't say that anyone's grief is particularly simple, but some of them feel a little bit more straightforward than others at times. And I think having time with the body, having ability to visit, can sometimes be really healing for certain people. I'm curious if you have any instances where that just hasn't really been tenable because of the way that someone's died.
I was actually going to tell an opposite story right now of how I do make it possible no matter what. 6 months ago now, a friend's son died. He was 21 and killed in a car accident. So right away, you know, you hear killed in a car accident, you just assume they won't be able to come home. They've gone to the coroner's office. They might need an autopsy. It's always, always possible to bring somebody home. They wanted to just do a quick viewing at a funeral home. They did not want to do embalming, anything like that. So they called the funeral home, and the funeral home was absolutely atrocious. They told the mom that if he wasn't embalmed, that there was a chance that his guts could fall out everywhere during the viewing, which can't be further from the truth and a total lie, just because this family didn't want to pay for an embalming and they just wanted to do a quick goodbye. And that's first the biggest problem that a lot of people run into. They just want to see their person and say goodbye. And the funeral home says, okay, it'll be $500. It'll be $1,200. It'll be $5,000. That's disenfranchised grief right there. I always say there's not very many businesses where you have to pay to get something that belongs to you back. And that's what the funeral industry does. So she called me and she's like, is it even possible to just bring him to the house for a few hours? And I said, yeah, it is. And what we did was we hired somebody within the funeral business to just re-suture him. That was it, just to redo the stitches of the coroners. And then we brought him home. His mom had bought dry ice. They thought they would keep him at home for just a few hours. It was kind of bizarre. He's 21. His friends all were like, ugh, like, I don't know about this. 2 days went by and the mom finally called me and she's like, okay, we're ready. We're ready to take him to the water crematory. They decided to drive him themselves, but his four best friends, these 21-year-old dudes, were like, we want to carry him out. That's something that we want to do. And so they did. They carried him out and put him in the back of the van. His girlfriend got in the van with him and just curled up next to him. They had a whole pillow. It was really sweet. But afterwards, this is the special part. One of the guys was just like, ma'am, I just need to tell you, I thought that this was going to be the grossest, creepiest thing. And he's like, and now I don't want to let him go. He's like, thank you so much for giving us this time and this space. And you think about that right there, of how people don't have the time and space. In a normal scenario without a home funeral, I think about what would a 21-year-old guy do when he learns his best friend died? Probably get really drunk and maybe drive and also die like his best friend. Instead, we gave them a space for them to come together, to grieve together, to be with their friend, to say goodbye, and that's it. I mean, so easy, so simple. Cost the family maybe $40. Like I said, then they drove him to the water crematory themselves, so they didn't have to pay for transportation. The water crematory took care of the death certificate and all the paperwork, and then they came back to witness him going into the chamber. So they were there for the whole thing. Their grief is heavy and hard and difficult because nobody prepares for that, right? But it's also different. And I, as a funeral director or old funeral director, can say that I can see a visual difference in their physical appearance and how they grieve just because of those first few days, just because they got to grieve the way that they needed to, which they never would have gotten at a conventional funeral home, especially the one here in town that said those horrible things to them.
I feel like funeral homes are one of those things where when you hear that they're for profit most of the time, you're like, why is someone making money, unsustainably making money off of this? Like, it's, I think it can get a little confusing sometimes.
It's a multi-billion dollar industry. During COVID, they made more money than they ever have. So, yeah, the casket companies made almost $12 billion during COVID, where we couldn't have funerals, but people were still buying caskets and buying those packages. And it was during that time in the corporate world, though, that I saw a documentary about home funerals. And that was like my, this is it. This is it. And I'm a funeral director and I had no idea that this was even legal. I just wanted to like scream off the rooftops, don't use a funeral home, do it yourself. Like, I'm going to be the one who saves you all. But that's silly because you can only teach so many people. And so having death wives, I get so emotional sometimes because my first class that I ever taught was to my friends. There was 10 people there. And now we'll have a class with, 75 to 100 people from all over the world taking our classes. So it's just really, really cool.
It's amazing. I'm so glad that you guys do this as a service and help educate people in that way. Yeah, I feel like we're in this age of like there's so much information, but sometimes people are still not getting access to the information that they need. Something about the fact that we lack death culture here is you only end up with the information at a time when you're not necessarily ready to receive it. So like when someone is actively in grief is not really the time to be learning about a lot of these things. You should be learning about them ahead of time or using someone like a death doula who this is their expertise. First of all, water cremation is so cool. Yeah. Can you speak a little bit to what water cremation is and how that process is a little different?
Yeah. So I'll start first by saying with water cremation or fire cremation, a witness cremation is always allowed. You just have to ask. And usually it's an extra charge, of course, but that is also something that I've always really promoted families to do and to be involved in because it's that finality, you know, it's that, okay, I'm watching them one more time and their body is now going to transform into somebody else. And now the person that I love is everywhere. So I love witness cremations. But water cremation is not new. Again, just like home funerals, nothing is new. We're just reinventing it and bringing it back because it worked. So water cremation is the opposite of fire cremation, where you use water and alkali. So it's a 95% water base and then 5% alkali. So like lye, stuff that's found in soaps in your home. And then the process, the water is heated up. The body gently kind of rocks back and forth. And all the tissues and fat dissolve into this liquid, and then the skeletal remains are there. Just like fire cremation, those skeletal remains are crushed down, and then they're returned to the family. So with fire cremation, the ashes are usually kind of gray, a little chunky. With water cremation, you're only getting back the skeleton. So it's like white flour. Is almost how to describe it. But the cool part about this, so I always tell people, if you like fire cremation because you want to scatter the ashes or, you know, your family moves around, that's great. But you can have that with water cremation too. But you have added bonuses as well. The water, the liquid that was used to break down the body becomes neutral again after the process and is used as a fertilizer. It's all of our basic parts, our peptides, our nitrogen, our sugars, our salts, broken down into this liquid. And this liquid is used in farms and flower farms all throughout Colorado. And there's a really cool farm called Half Moon Farm in Lakewood, Colorado, that uses the liquid for their flowers. And then they invite the families to come and pick those flowers and take them home. So your loved one really does continue to give new life. Which is beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. You can't get that with fire cremation, unfortunately. The other huge, huge part of it is the amount of carbon emissions that fire cremation gives off versus water cremation. It's like night and day. The amount of fire cremations that we do in America alone, we could go halfway to the sun and back each year. That's the amount of energy we use. It's like driving. I think it's 500 miles, 600 miles in a truck. That's the amount of emissions a single fire cremation puts off. So when we're talking about the environment, when we're talking about how important all these things are, we do need to look at our death care because fire cremation has actually been pretty not so good on our environment, but it's the most popular choice.
Well, I think it's also touted as being like the more environmentally friendly choice, which sounds a bit like a fallacy.
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, I think when they started to like try and boost cremation, it was, we're going to run out of cemetery land. This is a greener option because you take up less space. Not really looking at the big picture of like, well, how much fuel does it take to cremate a single person? How hot of heat do we have to have that? And then how much emissions? I mean, if you have mercury fillings, that mercury turns into gas and goes everywhere. Fire crematories also have to be in industrial areas. They're not legally allowed to be around people. So I always say, think about that. That's probably not too safe if you're not supposed to be anywhere near a crematory and it has to be in industrial places.
I've also been hearing a lot recently of turning people into compost.
Yes. I love human composting. Just have to start with that. If I don't do natural burial or burial at sea, I'm going to be composted. Those are my top three. But human composting, again, just like water cremation, has actually been around since like the late 1800s. It was used in farming, and it's a really simple process of placing a body in kind of a chamber, again, like a little basket in a way, with wood chips, alfalfa, and straw. Just like a compost would be. You add a small amount of water, small amount of oxygen. While we decompose, we naturally, all those gut bacteria and flora, heat our body up to about 145 degrees. So there's no mechanical need to add anything else. We just literally compost ourselves with these other materials. We say there's two different kinds of human composting, a more mechanical way and then the more natural or slow way. The mechanical way does just keeps a better eye on the temperature, the amount of oxygen, moving the unit. And so with that process, it's about 30 to 60 days. With the more slow process, it is about 9 to 10 months, which is kind of sweet if you think about it, because that's like our gestational period. And so to think that you're transforming into the soil. And a lot of these facilities let families come. So the families can come and sit next to their loved one while this process is taking place. And then at the end of the process, you do have a giant truckload of beautiful, rich soil. Washington State is the first place that legalized it. Katrina Spade is like the person. If people are interested, look her up. But that's what a lot of families do, is they donate to the places that have just been destroyed from forestry. And so it really is a way to give back to the environment, right? To give new life to the environment. The other thing is, I just told you how bad cremation is and the amount of emissions. This does the exact opposite. It actually sequesters 200 pounds of carbon with each process. So it's like canceling out two cremations. Because soil is actually just as important as trees. And the amount of soil is almost like planting 10,000 trees. It's slow. It's beautiful. Families can make trees and orchards and all this stuff. But it is really healing the environment too, which there's nothing else in the funeral care industry that can say that.
I love that. That one is the most environmentally friendly version. I told someone the other day that I was like, please grow tomatoes out of me.
Yes.
And they were just flabbergasted. Like, they were just very uncomfortable. I think they thought it was funny, but also uncomfortable. And I was like, this shouldn't be uncomfortable.
There's no humanness that remains. So even in that water liquid, even with the human composting, if you tested it, there's no DNA. You would never know that that was once a person. If that helps comfort people who want to grow tomatoes. I don't think it's weird. I think it's awesome.
You're basically the closest thing to like a grief professional.
I don't know about that. I'm a professional griever. That's how I feel. I'm really good at grieving. And so I've learned how to be able to hold space for people who are grieving. And then I've also, because of my job and because of just learning and conferences and books, how we could do grief better and just introducing those ideas to people. You know, grief counselors are awesome, but people still have this big stigma about therapy. I think students who take our classes might even feel this, that it is therapeutic to learn about grief, to learn about dying. And it kind of rewrites a narrative for them around their person's death and then maybe what they could do next time. And we're not grief therapists in any way. We are professional grievers.
Actually, I love the story you shared earlier about, I believe you mentioned that there were sons who didn't want to talk to their father while he was alive. But then, you know, once he was dead, they found space. I think that's really kind of a beautiful summary of this, is that it's not that you're necessarily, you missed out on having conversation with them while they were alive. Sometimes it's just that it needs to be totally different. Sometimes they can't be here. It needs to be a different relationship for it to be successful for that person who's still alive.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that also catches people off guard of, well, what's your relationship with them now? They're like, well, they're dead. Yeah. And like, do you still talk to them? Do you still miss them? Do you still, like, that is a relationship that continues. So how do you live healthily if your relationship maybe wasn't, you know, how do you shift that? And that's what I got to have this woman share, is that she got to witness them transform how their relationship was with their dad after his death took place. You know, that was for them. I don't think that was for their dead dad at all. That was for them. That's the thing with death, is like, we're the ones still alive. So how are we taking care of ourselves? How do we take care of our grief? And it can look different for everyone. But if you don't want to say things out loud, I always tell people, write a letter to them. I love the concept, leave a voicemail to them. But some of the stuff you may want to say, you don't ever want to have recorded. And so you write it all out on a piece of paper and then you burn it. And people are so shocked at how good that feels, because they're like, I didn't do anything. I was like, you did. You did a physical act of writing, took all of your thoughts and feelings and put them in a physical space, and then you let it go by burning it. And then when you break it down like that, they're like, oh, I did do something, I guess. And it does feel better. So it's never too late to have a relationship with your dead person, ever. One thing I think that is really, really important to talk about is, what do you want to have happen if you are dying? It's wild to me, because people plan birthday parties, they plan weddings, and some people never get married, but they're always looking, oh, I'd love this location and this dress. Every single one of us will die. Every single one of us. And we don't think about it, and we don't plan for it, and we don't do anything. And it's so dumb, first off, because it's inevitable. But the second thing is the harm and pain and suffering that it causes families, especially if they're clueless, you know. And we can have these conversations anytime. I planned my funeral when I worked at that very first funeral home, and it really hasn't changed at all. It's still pretty fun, still natural burial, streamers, all sorts of fun things. But it's an important thing to think about. And the other thing is, you know, as people get older, what do they want their dying to look like? Do they want to go to a nursing home, or do they absolutely want to be at home? I mean, these are conversations to have, you said it earlier, before you're in active grief, before somebody's actively dying. It's not the time to start saying, oh, should we have a green funeral for her? And should we invite all these people in and light candles? No, you're like completely present in that moment of, oh my gosh, this is actually happening. I can't believe it. And that's the thing, is like, they're always like, I can't believe it. We weren't prepared at all, but it's going to happen. So I always just tell people, reach out to your loved ones and just say, I listened to this podcast, I took this class, I did something, and I learned this. And it just made me curious of, you know, when you die, what would you want? Because that would make me feel comfortable. If I have that roadmap of what would make you happy, then it'll help me when I'm deep in grief of knowing what to do. And usually when families hear it that way, they're like, oh, yeah, I don't want you to be like not knowing what to do and sad and afraid that you're going to mess up. Like, yeah, let's talk about that. Death is always going to be, I think, a hard topic for people because of the grief part. It's not the death part. Death and dying is natural. You could be in the middle of a field and die, or you could be in a hospital and die, just like a baby. You could have a baby anywhere. Your body's going to know what to do. It's the living that don't know what to do with the loss of that person. And so they don't even want to talk about it beforehand, but it's so important to do so, because they are going to be without that person. So what can they do for them at the end?
Do you have any resources or things that you would suggest for people?
Gosh, resources. There's so many. Visit thedeathwives.org. That's a good one. The National Home Funeral Alliance has tons of educational stuff out there. There's the Green Burial Alliance as well. They have a worksheet of how to have conversations about what they want at the end of life. There's a lot of things out there, but really it's just having a conversation in a way that's not scary and not sad. You know, you can say, it will be sad when I don't have you anymore, but I want to make sure that you have everything that you want at the end, because you've given me everything that I need. It's a gift for both people, and it's something that so many people miss out on because they didn't want to talk about it beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to our special bonus episode highlighting the work of the Death Wives. You can check them out at deathwives.org and find the links to the resources Lauren mentioned in the episode description. Voicemails for the Dead is a podcast centering stories of complex or disenfranchised grief. If you would like to support this work, please consider donating on our website, voicemailsforthedead.com, or sharing this podcast with a friend. I'm Haley Tamar Brown, and we'll see you next time.